I'm Knut Behringer, and...
You have created a most interesting film called Science...
Yeah, the range, I mean, it basically it was a late career, not so much a career move, but an interest more than a career, and after I left the National Art Gallery, what was it, the early 90s, we discussed a lot of topics, Jan and I. Jan is the producer, and she's also directed an excellent film herself called Te Hono Ki Aotearoa, which is a waka-making with Hector Busby, so that's been a very successful one. But we've done about four or five films together, yes, since the late 90s, early 2000? Mm.
It's such a remarkable thing, because I was struck by... like my own memories of growing up in Canterbury with those kind of modernists that were friends with Leo's and so it was very poignant for me to see a lot of that black and white footage and a lot of those portraits and stuff like that, and yet I've become such a dinosaur now that...
You've become such a what?
Dinosaur that it's great, I think, to sort of look at this again with a new kind of perspective, because there are ideas about identity and history change rapidly, don't they?
Well, that's right, and I think also, you know, the context in which all these things occur change so drastically, so we're constantly revising our viewpoints or having a fresh look and assessing what happened 50, 60, 70 years ago and assessing that in a way. I think films do that. It's about memory as much as about newfound ideas pertaining to those memories. So I think the film, in general, a film does, particularly a documentary film, does have that opportunity to reflect on that and convey that.
Where did the genesis of the idea for this come about, really?
You mean signed Teo's Cohen?
Yep.
Well, it was in the back of our minds, but not as a film. It at the launch of Damien Skinner's biography, which must have been late 2018, 2019, and then the exhibition that took place at the end of 2019 at the City Gallery here. Damien suggested, "Oh, look, why don't you go and do a film on Teo's Cohen?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, okay. Seeing I can pronounce his surname better than anybody else, why not?" So it went on from there. And it was a nice reintroduction, because I had correspondence with Teo towards the end of his life about a whole lot of issues that were bothering him. And so I was reasonably aware of where he was sitting, but nobody had really exposed or expounded on what he had done in how many years, 50 years before that, because he arrived here just before the Second World War, so he'd been here a long time.
I know, and actually bringing that fresh pair of eyes into a kind of very colonial New Zealand at that time, his viewpoint was completely different from the establishment here.
Yeah, it was. I mean, but that's not to say there weren't kindred spirits within New Zealand. And I think, you know, his openly gay lifestyle at that time must have been quite remarkable. But then again, some of the New Zealand gay people were fairly open about it, at least away from the city. So, you know, it wasn't that unusual, but it was, you know, apart from particular circles, and especially in Christchurch, it was a pretty dull landscape. And I experienced that myself when I arrived here in the 1956, in comparison to what was happening in Europe. It was a pretty grey environment, and I think that was the sort of end period of New Zealand as a society, politically and socially, coming to the end of a generation, so to speak, you know, the end of the generation that had lived through the war. So there was a younger generation coming through, and Teo certainly tested the parameters of that environment at the time, and then not only tested it, but he also detested it.
Yep. And I think that's so evident in the complexity. I found this fascinating in the way that Tao was such a complex character, like a normal human being, but because of the way the life was lived so publicly and over such a long period of time, this film really explores so many different viewpoints within his life and contexts, I think.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, he makes that quite clear. I mean, I think one of the things that we try to do in the film is to let Tao talk quite a lot based on the audio archives we have and some of the film footage we have from that period, quite early on in the 50s and some of the 60s and some later in the film shoot that was held at the late Tony Fomerson's place. He is a complex character. He was very mixed up. He was very much on the outer with his family, and that had a lot to do with him sort of breaking out and coming to, you know, coming out as a gay person, particularly vis-a-vis his parents, and it must have created quite a different atmosphere at home, I would imagine. And then subsequently leaving home altogether just before his parents went back to Indonesia. So he was a fraught person, and he makes that quite clear, that he had those hang-ups. He had that propensity to end up, as he says, in a nut house. You know, that was quite clear. And he's talking about that in a sort of mid-40s, late 40s.
Also, I think that exploration of him and some of the issues around, you know, those more that were seen more controversial or radical acts of his life have kind of masked his place within a very long kind of history, that late second half of the 20th century history of art. It was really interesting to see him at Formerson's house.
Yeah, no, I think that there was a suppression, not so much a suppression of forgetfulness, because there were other agendas at play in New Zealand art history and the making of identities, and Tao having been out of New Zealand for 10 years and only coming back briefly for a short period at the end of his life, he suffered the fate that anybody does that leaves these shores and tries to make a career or not overseas. And so you get written out of art history, despite the fact that you leave behind quite a trail of important people who've been in contact with you and who've been affected by you, who've been admiring of you or detesting you, whatever, you know, terminology you might use. And I think if you see the film, you'll see where the acolytes are, and you'll also understand some of the propensities for him to be arrogant, it's easy to tread on his toes. He's pretty edgy as a personality, and you can understand that. So the rediscovery, in a sense, is almost inevitable, isn't it? You have that quite often, a long period of 10 or 20 years, and then suddenly somebody says, hey, Tao was quite important vis-a-vis Gordon Walters, and why was that? And suddenly somebody writes a biography, all the ideas come out, and suddenly you go to the auction rooms and Tao's home fetches $200,000 or $300,000 for an old mural that he did for the post office in the 80s. You know, so history has a funny, well, certainly art history has a funny way to turn around and remake people or rediscover people.
Yes, and that must be one of the things that you find fascinating in, in looking at the New Zealand art scene, because it's often been so discreet or, not given the sort of, you know, it's been more, it's not that it's underground, but it's certainly not in a giant stadium with tight shirts and running around kicking balls. It's a really interesting, but it's been a really persistent thread. Canterbury has such an interesting relationship with art.
Yeah, sorry, you'll have to speak up just a fraction because I found that last bit very hard to hear. But I think it happens to other people as well, because I remember we put a major show of Hans Westerus together in 2004 or whatever it was, toured around the entire country, made a film about her, and voila, suddenly she is a New Zealand icon, award winner, suddenly her works fetch great sums of money, and she'd largely been forgotten. So there are ways in which to provide an impetus to a career, or rediscovering people, or putting them back up front there for people to reassess. And I think, you know, in the meantime, they had still been making great work, but it wasn't noticed because curators, museums had moved on to other, more contemporary things.
And you're going to come... And you and Jen are going to come to both of the Lumiere screenings for this?
Yeah, we will, and depending on my well-being, because I've had a reasonable amount of treatment at the moment for some cancer, and I think that I'll go away for the night. Maybe we do the one in Dunedin as well.
Yep.
Ideally, we'd love to do one in Timaru, because a lot of the settings for the film are from that area, with the rock drawings and the, around that area. But definitely in Christchurch, so we'll be here for those two. I think it's, what is it, the 10th and 11th?
I'll just double check.
Yep. Anyway, we'll be there.
That is so exciting. It's so exciting that we'll have people in town to talk about their films and see. I've got Wellington's schedules come up on my phone.
Yeah. Well, I hope you guys stay in level two or maybe even level one, and it might be even better because, you know, we've cancelled the whole Auckland segment of the festival, which is, God, the poor people at the festival trying to arrange a program, it must be hell.
Yep.
So that's all been cancelled. So maybe next year we'll do a special screening at the gallery or wherever. But that's a real shame. So anyway, yeah, we'll be down there.
Okay, that's absolutely wonderful, and I'll make sure the date and time is put on to this. Because
get the right date, the right time, and tell them that we'll both be there, okay?
Exactly, that's so wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today. It has been really much appreciated.
Okay, Amanda, thank you.
Great, bye-bye.
Bye.